Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PAION AG conference call on the financial results of the first nine months of 2017, hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Söhngen and Abdelghany Omari. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you will be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Ralf Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of the first nine months of 2017. My name is Ralf Penner. I'm PAION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Wolfgang Söhngen, PAION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our Chief Financial Officer. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the Q3 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take your questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted on our website and were also given in today's quarterly statement. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and a replay will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PAION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. An Hinweis für die deutschsprachigen Teilnehmer. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should start right on now with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ralf. Hello to everybody on the phone. We wanted to start with elucidating some of the highlights of this year. Definitely the most important one was the completion of the bronchoscopy study and the colonoscopy study in very sick patients with stunning results. We also completed two successful financings, which Abdel will go into more detail during his presentations. We have added two members to our board to have a broader reach of discussions and outreach to potential partners and financing opportunities. We have our partner, Pharmascience, had a meeting with Health Canada, and there is a possibility for a launch independent of the abuse liability studies that are still ongoing. Our pharma, our partner in Russia, has started a phase III trial in general anesthesia. We have received two very good responses to our expanding of our IP portfolio with a grant for the formulation patent in Europe and a dosing patent in Japan. I would like to this that I'm just returning from a three-week tour of the world, and visited important conferences. First of all, the American College of Gastroenterology, where we had a very good meeting also with Aries, the U.S. company of Cosmo, in order to discuss the direction of filing and how we position remimazolam in this important market. Then we had a discussion at the American Society of Anesthesiologists with European and U.S. anesthesiologists to discuss also the European trial that we are planning. The positive feedback of the American colleagues was that this would be a very interesting study also to be performed in the U.S. I did a little bit of roadshow in New York with investors. At the end of the U.S. trip, we had the CHEST meeting, where the late breaker was presented of the bronchoscopy study, which had a very positive echo amongst the physicians, and I think there's also a good coverage in press. And also, there were our partner Pendopharm was present at our booth, and we had some people visiting from Hana Pharm, our partner in South Korea. From there, I went on to Tokyo, where we had a super symposium on remimazolam with also two of the Japanese KOL presenting the data, the ONO data, both the ICU and general anesthesia. And with Professor Yamada, we had a very reputable moderator who supported the whole event. And so I think we have done a lot in these last 2 weeks to make remimazolam more present in the minds of physicians and of international thought leaders. And the final question in Japan also was, when can we have this drug to be used in Japanese patients? So that shows that there is a demand and people want to look at this. And there was a delegation of 6 people from Hana Pharm, our South Korean partner, at EXA, had come to Tokyo to attend this symposium. I would now like to close this introductory remarks and hand over to Abdel.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good afternoon, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would like to guide you through the financial key figures for the first 9 months of this year, compare with the prior year period, and also give an outlook for the full year 2017. But first of all, I would like to recap the capital increases that we have conducted this year. In February, we carried out a capital increase with subscription rights for existing shareholders, €2.05 per share, with gross proceeds of €5 million. We had a backstop investor from the U.S. to buy all shares that were not subscribed. The uptake of the offering was 96%, and in total, we issued 2.4 million new shares. Then in July this year, we did a private placement with 2 investors at €2.84 per share with gross proceeds of €8 million. A U.S. institutional investor invested €5.2 million and may subscribe to another up to 2.8 million new shares until the end of April 2018. And our second largest shareholder, TI Graf, invested €2.8 million. In total, we issued 2.8 million new shares. With these 2 capital increases, we have raised about €13 million to prepare the dossier in Japan and also to prepare a new phase 3 study in general anesthesia in Europe. Let me now guide you through the selected items on the P&L. Revenue significantly increased compared to the first 9 months of 2016 and amounted to €5.1 million. These revenues mainly relate to the upfront payment of €10 million that we received in 2016 from Cosmo. Research and development expenses decreased from €16.4 million in the first 9 months of 2016 to €13.5 million in the first 9 months of this year. This decrease mainly results from lower costs for phase 3 studies on the one hand and higher costs for phase 1 studies on the other hand. Compared to the first 9 months of 2016, general administrative and selling expenses decreased by €1.4 million to €2.8 million in the first 9 months of this year. General administrative expenses decreased mainly due to costs for the preparation of potential capital measures in the prior year period that were ultimately not conducted. Selling expenses decreased mainly because essential costs in connection with the preparation of license agreements in the prior year period have not been incurred in the first 9 months of this year. In total, a net loss of €8.5 million was incurred compared to a net loss of €16.1 million in the prior year period. The net loss includes income from tax credits in the amount of €2.8 million. Now I would like to move to the selected balance sheet items and an overview of headcount on the next slide. Total assets decreased by €2.7 million compared to the end of 2016. This mainly results from the reduction of tax credit claims by 1.9 million euros, as well as to a reduction of cash and cash equivalents. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, cash decreased by 0.6 million euros compared to end of 2016. This reduction mainly results from negative cash flows from operating activities in the amount of 13 million euros on the one hand, and positive cash flows from financing activities in the amount of 12.5 million euros on the other hand. Equity increased by 3.9 million euros to 28.8 million euros as of 30th September 2017. This is mainly due to the net loss of 8.5 million euros and the net proceeds from the two capital increases that we conducted this year. The equity ratio was 81.6%. Staff development is illustrated on the lower right-hand side. Compared to an average number of 36 employees in 2006, we had staff of 32 employees on average in the first 9 months of this year. Finally, I would like to give an outlook for the full year 2017. For the purpose of comparison, you can see actual figures for financial year 2016 in the left column. Regarding revenues, we expect these to amount to approximately 5.8 million euros. This is mainly due to the expected recognition of the remainder of the upfront payment from Cosmo. Given the ongoing development activities, we will incur significant R&D expenses, which we expect to be in a range of about 18 to 20 million euros. SG&A costs will be lower than in 2016 and amount to about 4 million euros. Based on the estimate for the R&D expenses, we expect tax income from R&D tax credits in the amount of approximately 4 billion euros. In total, we expect a decreased net loss in the amount of approximately 12 to 14 million euros. Regarding our liquidity, with cash of 29.6 million euros at the end of September, we have sufficient funds to complete the ongoing development in the U.S., based on current planning. For a new European Phase 3 program, funding of approximately 25 million euros until filing is required. And in the first step, we have raised 8 million euros through the capital increase conducted in July that I mentioned earlier. Including expected tax credits, but without potential milestone payments and without potential costs for the new Phase 3 program in Europe, our cash runway is into the second half of 2019. Thank you so far. Now I hand back to you, Wolfgang.
Thank you very much, Abdel. I would like to start with a kind of global view, helicopter view, by sharing information with you on a recent survey that was made globally, and I only highlight the most important figures here. So what you see here is the projection of whether or not there will be an increase in colonoscopies in the next couple of years. And you see that Japan has 37% growth anticipated, US 40%, UK and France 60%. This is probably due to the fact that they have the lowest screening rate today. So, and what you see on the right hand is a decrease. So there is probably... That means that the potential to and the requirement for adequate sedation in these procedures seems to be on the rise, and this is very good news. On the next slide, you see how colonoscopies are done these days. So the darker green represents no sedation, and as you see in Japan, 58% of patients today get colonoscopy without any sedation. And that is pretty much close to what market research has given us too from Japan. And that led to the decision of Ono to start with general anesthesia as the first indication. If you look at countries like UK, you see that there mostly bedazolam is being used, the light green, and no sedation is still 20%. In the U.S., not surprisingly, the amount of patients that get colonoscopy without sedation is 2%. And that's pretty much the response rate that we have seen in our phase 3 trial. So there are 22% of patients in the U.S. tolerate this, whereas in other countries, the tolerance of this is different. And you see that the market in the U.S., based on these numbers, suggests that there's a pretty even split between conscious sedation and deep sedation, which would stand for conscious sedation would be midazolam, and deep sedation would be propofol. Then on the next slide, these are all slides that were discussed at the ATG meeting recently. You see that the current bill to the healthcare system in the U.S. to provide anesthesia for endoscopy and colonoscopy adds up to $5 billion per year. So this is a big number, and there was consensus at the conference that this will be a target for the U.S. healthcare system to reduce that number, and I think here we have a nice offering. On the next slide, I would like to highlight what is our value proposition in general anesthesia. This is a publication of 2016 where the headline that was an article that was very highlighted in this issue of anesthesia. It said, is 80 millimeters mercury the new 60? That meant that up to then, everybody felt that if they have patients at a blood pressure, mean arterial blood pressure of 60 millimeters mercury, that's fine. But this has now dramatically changed. Mean arterial blood pressure of 60 millimeters mercury is now recognized as a danger for patients. And this is highlighted on the next slide, where you see in the red highlighted line, thresholds of 65 millimeters mercury should be kept to avoid both heart and kidney injury. And it also definitely has an impact on the brain as well. So this is just to put what we are doing into context. So the procedural sedation, most attractive market is the U.S., where we have a huge potential, less so in Japan, but obviously a need to grow in Europe. And the world common theme in anesthesiology is how can we avoid significant hypotension during surgery and anesthesia, and this is how we have designed our clinical phase 3 trial. Remimazolam, and I go through this very quickly, has the interesting offering in all these aspects. There's improved safety, improved patient satisfaction, predictability of overall procedure time, which means efficiency, and also that means reduced resources for supervision, so making the colonoscopy and other procedures cheaper when using remimazolam compared to the current agents that are in place. For general anesthesia, as I mentioned, avoidance of hypotension will be a key point that will be addressed in the future. And I think we have significant data that show that here we have a very good chance to be better than propofol. On the next slide, I would like to just review briefly the positive results in the three U.S. phase 3 trials. So we have also, next to these results, we have achieved some progress on our IP front. I already discussed this in the beginning of the presentation. We have now more than 1,700 patients on drug, and we have seen repeatedly very good results, rapid onset and offset, and very safe data. On the next slide, I would like to highlight again how important is the reversibility of sedation with flumazenil is. The reversal agent here in this graph, for those who are not familiar with this, this depicts a very high dose of remimazolam that puts the patient down to loss of consciousness. And then after 3 minutes, where the red arrow comes in, the reversal agent is given. And if you follow the purple curve, you see that this goes back up to 5, which means fully alert. And if you don't do this, you have a delay in the recovery of about 7-8 minutes, and these can be very critical in a situation where a patient has respiratory or cardiovascular depression, which frequently happens with propofol. But for propofol, there is no reversal agent. There's only the anesthesiologist or people who are able to intubate a patient that can manage that situation if cardiovascular respiratory depression occurs. In the case of remibenzazam, you give the reversal agent and patients are back to normal within 2 minutes. On the next slide is the outline of all the U.S. phase 3 trials that we have performed. So there were a total of more than 1,000 patients. All of the patients received fentanyl at the start as a base in order to address the pain. The success was measured by completion of the bronchoscopy or colonoscopy, no requirement for rescue medication, and no more than a defined number of top-ups during the procedure. The patients were, after the fentanyl, randomized, then either given in a double-blind fashion remimazolam or placebo, and we also added in an open-label midazolam at the dose which is described in the FDA labels. Next slide, you see how these three different trials compare or where they are different. If you look at the top line, you see the mean age, and you see that the remimazolam phase 3 colonoscopy in ASA 1, 2, 3 patients are the youngest patients, and the study in bronchoscopy in ASA 3, 4 colonoscopy patients more or less are, you know, on average 8 years older than the other study. So, and you see this depicted in another way. There are close to 50% and 40% in the ASA 3, 4 that are above 65, and only 14% in the large colonoscopy trial. This was a discussion with the FDA, so we needed to deliver a minimum number of patients in a certain age, and this was the biggest contribution was made in the bronchoscopy study. And if you go down to the bottom, you see that the number of ASA3 patients in the bronchoscopy study was 38% and 52% in the ASA3-4 colonoscopy study, only 6% or 7% in the ASA1-3 colonoscopy study. So these are very important parameters to establish the safety, because specifically the elderly and those patients that are very sick have a risk of developing cardiorespiratory depression. On the next slide, you see the very comparable outcome of all phase 3 trials in this program. So the response rates of remimazolam vary between 82 and 91%. Placebo response rate between 0 and 3.4, and the midazolam response rate between 35 and 13%. So very comparable and very compelling results, and we have received a lot of positive feedback, specifically recently on the bronchoscopy trials. Therefore, let me go a little bit more into detail of the outcome in the bronchoscopy trial. So procedural success, as described above, was 82% in the remimazolam, 3.4% in the placebo, and 35% in the midazolam group. And you see that mostly the reason for this success was defined by the number of patients that required rescue sedation. Like in the colonoscopy study, we had a significant difference in time from first dose to start of the procedure, and we also saw a significant difference in how quickly patients recover after the procedure. Time to back to normal in the placebo group looks very high, but this may be because they have received higher doses of midazolam, but this is speculation at this moment in time. On the next slide, you see then for colonoscopy, which is the majority of patients that we are targeting, we have an average gain of 20 minutes per procedure. That means that physicians can do significantly more procedures in the same time when they use remimazolam instead of midazolam. I've talked to some of the people that have used, that were involved in the study, and they believe they can do as many patients with remimazolam as they could do with propofol. And this was the ultimate goal. So what are the next steps in the U.S.? As we have reported, we have still to perform an abuse liability or complete the abuse liability program in order to come to a final assessment of remimazolam's potential for abuse. So this has nothing to do with the efficacy or safety data that we have discussed on procedural sedation. This is a precaution because of the ongoing opioid crisis in the U.S. where regulatory agencies want to have a clear picture how this works. And I can understand that there was some potential ambiguity in our statement this morning about the abuse liability. We are in continuous discussions with the FDA about this program, and as soon as we have clarity on the last of these studies, we will give a new guidance on how soon we can complete these studies. But for now, we have given a conservative assumption. The next step then will be a pre-NDA meeting with the FDA, which will be shortly before filing in order to clarify last fine-tunings for the dossier. And as we have communicated before, Cosmo plans to file in the second half of 2018. On slide 29 is just a reminder of what the sedation and anesthesia region covers. So this goes from very light procedures, which are not very painful, to major surgery, general anesthesia, and remimazolam will be used in the future in this whole spectrum of sedation. So what's the plan beyond the U.S. opportunity? In Europe, we want to use general anesthesia as a lead indication, and we have recently completed the phase one study that allows us to come to a more precise assessment of the patients that are required to achieve a primary outcome. And this is, of course, subject to discussion with the EMA. Until we have had and completed these discussions, this number remains an approximate number because depending on the feedback, there may be either less or more patients, but we think that with 500, we are probably on the safe side. We also have the ambition to use remimazolam to change Pion from a development company into a company with own sales. And, of course, we are also open for value-generating partnerships, and we may not want to distribute in all countries in Europe, all 28 countries, so we will probably focus on the key and the larger markets and find distribution partners for the smaller countries. In Japan, the lead indication is general anesthesia. And now that you have seen those numbers of how many patients do not get sedation at this moment in time, you will understand that this was a very sensible business decision. The preparations for filing in Japan are ongoing, and of course, there's always uncertainty about discussions with regulatory authorities, but currently we still think it's realistic to file in the middle of 2018. And of course, we plan to partner in Japan, and we have seen also some pharma companies that visited our remimazolam symposium in Tokyo, and every one of those may be a potential. potential partner, but I cannot promise anything until we have a deal with Dry Ink. So what does the future hold for us, and what are our plans for the near-term future? Let's focus first on the three regions where we are active. Right now in the U.S., we are the completion of the clinical development program includes the abuse liability study. Therefore, we are still active. In Europe, we are actively preparing the phase 3 program in general anesthesia. And I would like to address one point that seems to have raised some questions. We will be dealing with more sick patients than in the owner study for the reason of positioning. A new drug at a reasonable price needs to show significant medical benefit. And the disastrous effects of hypertension are more pronounced in the elderly and more pronounced in patients that are very sick. If you imagine a young soccer player who breaks a leg, he can easily tolerate a very low blood pressure. But when you have a 60-year-old that already had a minor stroke, then you can imagine that this type of hypertension in this patient has a completely different outcome. And so from our marketing positioning in the launch phase, we will focus on the 60-plus and very sick patients. And therefore, we need to do this trial so that with the trial data, we can show the benefit, which is specifically targeting these patient population. In Japan, the filing process is ongoing, and it's a lot of work, and I'm very grateful for the team here in PAION that takes on this extra burden next to all the other activities. So what's going on in the rest of the world? So all of our partners have some activity ongoing. As you have heard, in Canada, we have had an interaction with Canada Health. In the U.S., we are working with our partner Cosmo to bring the team on board with Remy Mazalam and also interact with the KOLs that we have used in our trials. Turkey, MENA region, China, South Korea are all active either with regulatory activities or with clinical development programs. And currently we have a team that's traveling in Asia, and hopefully from there we also will be able to update you in the next call on what's going on there with specifically clinical development. So if you look at the globe, you see that half of the globe is blue by now. My ambition is it to take the globe blue completely. So this is the ultimate ambition of PAION, to have Remy Mazalam as a globally branded product in all three indications. This is still a long way to go, but with the first two indications, procedural sedation in the U.S. and general anesthesia in Japan, we are already quite advanced. Finally, I would not like to comment the last slide. I'll just leave it there for you to look at, because I think Remy Mazalam is quite a success story, both for PAION and also for patients and physicians and families who benefit from a good outcome. And therefore, I think we pioneers can be proud, and the ambition to become a pioneer in anesthesia and sedation is real and is becoming more real every day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang and Abdel, for your presentation. We would like to start now with the Q&A part of the call and start with the English-speaking participants.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Dennis Holm from Edison. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Firstly, in relation to the forthcoming intranasal trial in the U.S., Can you tell us a little about the sort of issues that you'll be needing to discuss with the FDA before you commence the second trial?
I mean, we don't know what the issues will be because we're still in discussions. And, I mean, the aim is to be able to estimate at what dose intranasally a pharmacodynamic effect is coming to light that may lead or indicate an abuse potential for remdesivir. This is the question. And we have to perform the trial before we can give any answer on what this exactly will be, because in the first trial we only have used different doses of remimazolam intranasally to see at what dose do we start to see a pharmacological effect, which is more related to sedation, which is a different animal than the liking of this sedation, which would be that potential of an abuse.
Okay, thank you. So just moving to Japan, I know you're in discussion with potential partners, but that can be a slow process in Japan. Is there any obstacle to you filing on your own in Japan without a partner?
I mean, the obstacle is potentially the amount of work that we would have to invest, and this could be conflicting with FDA activities. But other than this, it is more an operational issue and a resources issue than anything else, because the work will in either case be done by the CRO that is now working on this already. And a lot of the data that we are dredging right now for Japan will also be needed for the FDA dossier and the EMA dossier. So this is not just an exercise that's valuable for Japan.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to Europe, you've talked about for the general anesthesia trial you'll be recruiting sicker patients. Can you just tell us a little about the sort of patients you'll be targeting for that study?
If you recall the presentation that we gave about the remimazolam study, so you saw there was a group of patients in colonoscopy which are essentially healthy patients or patients with a disease that's very well compensated, like, you know, hypertension, but you take a drug, you don't have no problem. So we are targeting more these ASA3-4 patients in the general anesthesia study, because they are the ones who will have the greatest benefit from avoiding hypertension.
Okay, thank you. And again, in relation to the European study, how long do you think it might take to complete the phase 3 study in Europe? I know it took 2 years to do the bronchoscopy study in the US. Is it likely to take, you know, 2 years to do general anesthesia in Europe?
Well, we don't believe that it will take 2 years, but the devil is in the detail, and I will give you a better and more precise answer once we have defined all the details with the agency, because also the cardiac surgery once was planned to be very quickly, but then due to significant design changes by the agency, it was almost impossible to recruit patients.
Okay, thanks for that. That's all the questions from me.
The next question comes from the line of Simon Scholes from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. With propofol, and we've said in the past that anesthesiologist is required to be present at the procedure. With midazolam and prospectively with remimazolam, you don't need a physician. I mean, would a nurse be also present during the offset or during the onset portion of the procedure, i.e. would a physician have to be present during the entire onset and offset part of the procedure?
Well, number one, the exact phrasing is the sedation is given by, let's say, by a nurse under the supervision of the person who performs the procedure. So it is not the physician who gives the drug, because the physician is focusing on the procedure. So the drug should be given by the nurse, and the nurse is also supervising the vital signs during the procedure. Because you can imagine, if you work with a colonoscope in the wake of the patient, there's someone sitting at the other side of the patient who can look at the breathing capacity of that patient and see whether he's sleeping. So that's one element. Then at the wake-up time, the supervision has to be done by nurses, and this is also the case for midazolam, patients, because if a patient goes back to sleep, too deep sleep, there can be an obstruction of the airways, like a tongue blocking the airway. So therefore you have to monitor these patients until they are back to normal. So I would say during the procedure, that's where the physician is required. And after the procedure, the supervision is usually done by nurses.
Doesn't that mean, though, that the physician can go off and do another procedure during the wake-up period?
Well, no, as long as the patient is not really, if you cannot talk to the patient, I think normally the physician would be staying close to the patient, because it is his responsibility to decide whether or not any intervention for this patient is required. And if you look to the label of midazolam, it clearly says that you need a team, that these physicians require training in providing airway management. So in the U.S., for example, even our KOLs, every 2 years they have to undergo a retraining by an anesthesiologist in the hospital to be able to continue to provide midazolam. Only if all these precautions are being taken care of, you guarantee the safety of the patient, and this must be our primary objective.
Okay. Because with midazolam, the dose that's used in practice is between 5 and 6 mg, and presumably with 5 and 6 mg, the wake-up time must be well over 20 minutes, and so the physician would be required to be there for that entire period.
Not the entire period, but until the patient is able to speak, I would say yes. And then the patient may be fluctuating, and if the patient goes back to deep sleep, maybe the nurse is better served to ask the physician to have another look at this patient.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Just a reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads to ask a question. Just a final reminder, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads to ask a question. There are no further questions from the English-speaking participants, so we'll hand you back to Ralf Penner. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and to everybody for asking these questions. Now, as anticipated, we would like to ask the German participants to ask their questions in German. So, liebe Zuhörerinnen, Sie haben jetzt die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen auf Deutsch zu stellen, die wir dann auch auf Deutsch beantworten werden.
Vielen Dank. Sie haben jetzt die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen zu stellen. Bitte drücken Sie hierzu die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Möchten Sie Ihre Frage wieder zurückziehen, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 2. Noch einmal zur Erinnerung, falls Sie eine Frage stellen möchten, drücken Sie bitte die Tastenkombination Stern 1 auf Ihre Telefontastatur. Wir haben keine Fragen und somit übergebe ich das Wort zurück an Ralf Penner für abschließende Worte. Bitte schön.
Vielen Dank. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of the first 9 months of 2017. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but of course, please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the audio recording will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in PIO.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace the handsets.